I'm joined now by Professor Nick Kaiser from the Institute for Astronomy in Hawaii. And you're here to talk about a fantastic new telescope project called PanSTARRS. Tell us a bit about it.
The PanSTARRS project is being led by the institute I work for, and we managed to get funded by the United States Air Force to build this sucker.
They apparently have quite a lot of money to put towards astronomy. We would like to know why. Why is the U.S. Air Force interested in this?
Well, as trying to kill people in Iraq and things like that, they actually spend quite a lot of money on basic research. So they just spread it around and do sort of blue skies research, and sometimes good things come out of it and sometimes not.
Tell us a little bit about the PanSTARRS project. I mean, PanSTARRS sounds very much like yet another astronomical acronym. What does it stand for?
Hey, it stands for Panoramic Survey Telescope and Rapid Response System.
Goodness.
So really it's the survey telescope part that we're doing, and then the rapid response is really all the other telescopes on the planet, which will be used to follow up the exciting things that we discover going bump in the night.
So what stage is the project?
Well, we got funded in 2002, and it's been quite a wild ride since then. And we've managed to get one telescope built so far, and it's almost become operational now, and we're starting to get the first scientific results out of it, so it's very exciting for us.
You mentioned the first telescope, so presumably there is going to be more.
That's right. We hope to build four of them, and we're going to move them over to Mauna Kea, and we're going to tear down the university's existing telescope, much to the chagrin of some of my colleagues, and we're going to put up this new system, which will be about the same size, but it'll have four telescopes inside the enclosure rather than one. And there are also these rather revolutionary telescopes that can survey huge swaths of sky.
Why four telescopes? I mean, why couldn't one telescope do the same job?
Well, you could build this with one big telescope, but you'd miss out on quite a few advantages. One is that if you build small telescopes, you can build them a lot faster. And we're all getting older, and I want to see this thing getting results sooner. The other thing that's an advantage is sometimes when we take pictures of the sky, we see things which we might think are real objects, but are in fact false detections. And if you can take four observations of the same patch of sky at the same time, you don't have that problem.
So that's how these telescopes are going to work. They're not going to look at patches of sky next to each other. They're going to look at patches of sky, the same patch of sky.
That's the plan, yeah.
And how can you tell something which is not a real object by doing this?
Well, what'll happen is it'll only appear in one of the pictures. Then it's a sure sign that it's not real.
Okay, so we're talking about, I guess, noise on the CCD or
exactly.
Cosmic rays or something like
cosmic
that.
Cosmic rays, yeah.
Okay, now what sort of things is this instrument going to be good at looking at?
Well, almost everything that glows, and anything that moves, anything that's variable, and any exploding stars. We build it to be able to detect faint objects, and we build it to be able to scan the sky really fast, and we're going to operate it in a way which is carefully designed in order to be able not just detect things which are moving across the sky, but so you can link together the detections and figure out what the orbits of the objects are. So we can find out, for instance, if we've got a killer asteroid.
So that's a major key goal of this project, isn't it? I mean, talking about things which are moving, things which appear to move in your fields, we're talking about near-Earth objects, right? Things which are obviously moving. So we're not talking necessarily about stars which are moving, Joe.
Yeah.
Millions of light years away or anything like that. We're talking about things which are close to us, so these near-Earth asteroids, essentially.
Exactly.
How many are you going to expect to see?
About 10,000 in all.
That's amazing. That's quite a lot.
That's right. Well, we'll detect about 10 million main belt asteroids, but the ones we're really interested in are the near-Earth ones, and for those we expect about 10,000 over about a 10-year period.
Are these telescopes going to be observing the entire sky or just a small section of it?
The entire sky, or rather three quarters of the sky, because there's a quarter that we can't access from Mauna Kea.
Hmm. Do I see a connection now between the Air Force funding the project and possibly an external threat of a killer asteroid?
um, No, strangely not. No, you know, we're just funded to build and design brilliant technology. The idea is that if there's spin-offs for the military, they can copy our detectors and so on and incorporate them into their things. But they're actually not interested in any of the science we do. Right. There's other people in the military who may have some interest, but not the people we work for.
Perhaps some Hollywood directors, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
What else will Pan-STARRS be good at looking at other than near-Earth asteroids?
Well, this is the beauty of the thing, is that while you're scanning the sky looking for near-Earth asteroids, you see all the more distant asteroids. So people who are interested in those get some science out of it. You also see lots of things in the outer solar system. Then behind that, you'll see a billion stars in our galaxy. And then behind all those stars are all the other galaxies in the universe. So you name it, we're going to see it.
That's fantastic. Now, why is it that Pan-STARRS is going to be particularly good at looking for transient objects?
There's several things. One is that we've got really good observing sites in Hawaii. We get really sharp images. And that means you can detect fainter things, right? We've got these fantastic detectors, which are much larger than anyone has built before, so we can scan the sky much more rapidly. So those two things mean the rate at which we'll detect things is just much higher than anyone else. So we're going to see like 10,000 supernovae exploding. And the trouble with that is what you want to do every time you see a supernova, you want to go and have a look at it in detail with a 10-meter telescope. And unfortunately, there aren't enough 10-meter telescopes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you mentioned that we're getting close to having one telescope operational.
Yeah.
What's the timeline? When do we expect the entire Pan-STARRS network of four telescopes operational?
2012.
2012.
Is the plan, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. We look forward to hearing more about results from Pan-STARRS.
You're going to hear a lot of results. There's going to be a lot of discoveries. So watch this space.
We'll do. One last question for you. How did you get started in astronomy?
Well, I wanted to be a high-energy physicist, and I did a master's degree at Cambridge, but wasn't quite smart enough to get picked up by Stephen Hawking's group. But they said to me, why don't you go up the street and talk to this guy, Martin Rees? He might have a place for you. And he took me on, and that was a very good time to get into astronomy, because it was the start of all the new theories about dark matter dominating the universe and inflation and stuff. Everything was just starting to happen, so I really got in on the ground floor there.
Fantastic. So presumably before that, you wanted to be a high-energy physicist. What drew you towards physics as a study?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure it had something to do with the fact that my dad was a physicist, though before I sort of got serious about it, I wanted to be an artist. But after going to art school for a year, I discovered I had zero talent.
they couldn't teach you that at art school?
It took me a while to figure it out. I was slow on the uptake. But I'll tell you something, the thing that really turned me on is a good friend of mine. His brother dropped out of college. He had these physics books, and he gave one to me. And it was volume one of Feynman's Lectures on Physics.
Oh, yes.
And I started reading this book, and I thought, hey, this is kind of interesting. And I've been in love with physics since that day.
It's an amazing book, isn't it? I mean, there's a series of three books, which you know of. It's Feynman, yeah. Famous Feynman Lectures on Physics. And I've seen people read that on holiday. It's quite a strange reading material to see someone reading on holiday. But however, it's one of those books that you pick up, and for some reason it's compelling, obviously.
That's right. It starts at such a low level that anyone can understand it, and you can take it as far as you want. It goes into some of the deepest mysteries in physics, and it's all at the undergraduate level, and I wasn't even an undergraduate and could understand maybe half of it.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Nick Kaiser, thank you very, very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome.